Good evening, everybody. We're all here now. So my name is Vincent Duffy, and I'm the news director at Michigan Radio. Thank you. You might have recognized my editing from other stories that you've heard. So tonight we're here to talk about some problems with the groundwater in Michigan, and specifically some issues that we have reported on with arsenic in the Michigan water. Michigan Radio, in a partnership with the Center for Public Integrity and the Center for Investigative Reporting, did a five-part series on arsenic that aired on the Environment Report last week. And we also produced, in the partnership, a lengthy segment on the investigative reporting program Reveal that you might have heard about this problem, not only in Michigan, but at the national level. And we had a lot of additional stories that are on our website, michiganradio.org, as well. So when you leave tonight, if you're wanting to find out more about this issue, even more so, go to our website. All those stories are still available on the website, the web stories, the Environment Report stories that Rebecca did, and Reveal is still a link to that. You can listen to that as well. So this evening we have an opportunity to talk more about the issue. It's a fairly small group, so I'd like to try to keep this somewhat informal rather than just us talking right at you. We will have an opportunity for questions at the end, but if you've got a question that's right on topic, that's just burning, if Rebecca says something and that's exactly what you want to know more about, and you have a question, just raise your hand and I'll call on you. It should be just as sort of informal and as friendly as possible with the sharing of information tonight. So I do have three panelists that are with me this evening. I will introduce them by starting down at the end with Rebecca Williams. She is Michigan Radio's reporter and host of the Environment Report that you can hear on Tuesdays and Thursdays on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. It's won a whole host of national awards for the environment reporting that Rebecca does. Next to Rebecca is Ben Adair. Ben is a producer with the Center for Investigative Reporting and co-founded the Reveal program last year to create what they call a 21st century media property that brings together broadcast, digital, mobile, and social media around the world's best investigative reporting. So we were happy to participate in some of the best investigative reporting. Before that, Ben worked in various editorial roles at Marketplace and at American Public Media and Weekend America. And then we also pulled in tonight a non-radio guy. This is Chris Hoard, who's right next to me. And Chris is a hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, located in Lansing, Michigan. Their office is there. He's been with them since 2001. And he's participated in various groundwater and water quality projects throughout the state of Michigan during that time. So let's give just a quick welcome to the folks who volunteered to be panelists with us tonight. Ben, I'd like to start with you. If you could just sort of give us an idea of, how did the folks at Reveal come up with this idea of doing sort of a national look at arsenic, and what did you find when you did that?
Sure, it was sort of a funny thing that happened. I mean, when you think about arsenic, you think of like Game of Thrones or something like that, right? Arsenic is this old poison. We know it as an inheritance powder. It played a role in the ascension of at least one pope back in for the 1400s, and it was typically a poison that's been used in small quantities to seamlessly get rid of people, right? Arsenic is basically tasteless. It's got a bit of a sweet flavor. It dissolves very easily, so it's a nicely added to wine or to any drink, really. So when David Heath in the Center for Public Integrity said, there's all this hot news about arsenic that we need to let you know about, we were like, what? Arsenic? Really? But it turns out that the science on arsenic has been really evolving over the last 10 to 15 years. There have been a number of studies, peer-reviewed studies, that have come out even very recently showing that arsenic is a much more dangerous poison than we even knew. And the science that's been evolving is very similar to the way that the science evolved around lead in the late 60s and early 70s. Lead was not known to be a poison. It wasn't known to be harmful before, I think, the mid-60s or so, when some science started coming out saying, this bioaccumulates in the body. It affects very specific organs. We need to do something about this. And in the 70s, it became a big public health crisis. We took all the lead out of paints. and are still taking the lead out of paint. We took all the lead out of gasoline. Arsenic, in some ways, is even more toxic than lead because it doesn't affect specific organs, but it sort of affects the entire body. And the science that has been coming out has shown that even at levels that the government currently says is okay in water, it has a pretty significant cancer risk, and women are particularly affected by this. So if you're regularly drinking water at what the EPA now has is the legal limit for arsenic in drinking water, I think I'm going to get this right. If 100,000 women drink that water, 730 of them will come down with either bladder or there's like three types of cancer. Bladder cancer.
Lung cancer
is one of them. So it's a pretty high incidence of cancer. And this is all coming out of, most of the research is coming out of Columbia University, one particular scientist who studied lead and has now turned his attention to arsenic. So this has been known for probably 10 years or so. The EPA got wind of this science, and they said, "Oh, we need to look at arsenic again. We need to consider whether or not the regulations we have around arsenic are good enough." And so they prepared a scientific review, and then something happened. The scientific review got, because of some language that got inserted into a specific bill in 2011, the science just got sort of kicked down the road and kicked down the road and kicked down the road. And so EPA has not been able to tighten up its regulation around arsenic in drinking water. And so we have, and what we found in the course of this investigation, what David Heath found, was that there are many communities here in Michigan, some, but in other places, Maine is another big hotspot, where arsenic is at the legal limit. So technically it's okay, but kids particularly are being affected, their IQ points are being affected, and cancer rates are high because of the arsenic in the water.
Well, so you mentioned that Michigan is one of the lucky states that has these high arsenic levels in some areas, as well as Maine. And Rebecca, you traveled around Michigan and did some reporting on this. So what is the situation here in this state for people?
So pretty much, this is based on USGS studies and also from the Department of Environmental Quality. So Chris could talk a bit more about this too. But there are, throughout the Lower Peninsula, there are counties with arsenic that could be above 10 parts per billion, which is the EPA's limit. And then there's also, sorry, Bob, I'm getting feedback. Especially in the thumb of Michigan, the levels there they tend to be 50, so five times the EPA's limit, or 10 times or 20 times higher than the EPA's limit. So especially in the thumb, there are some very, very high levels of arsenic.
Ben, Chris, why is that? What's going on in Michigan and underground in the state that creates this arsenic?
Certainly. In Michigan, there are a few geologic units that have arsenic in the sediment. And when conditions are conducive to pulling that out, through a couple different mechanisms chemically, then that arsenic can become mobile and will get into a water supply or anybody who's withdrawing water from that affected aquifer. The particular ones in the thumb are related to the Marshall Sandstone, which has quite a bit of arsenic bound in certain minerals that are in the matrix of that sandstone.
We kept hearing in the reporting that it's naturally occurring. Is it all naturally occurring? Is there no evil corporation we can point to and say, well, it's their fault too, or is it all just coming from this chemical reaction that's occurring underground?
I'd say in Michigan, the majority of it is naturally occurring, but there are definitely cases where there's either pesticides that are improperly applied or near wells that aren't properly constructed so that water that's contaminated can get around the outside of the well. Or there's other times where cases of mining where arsenic gets leached out of sulfide minerals. that can also be incorporated in a water supply. So there are a few different ways other than naturally occurring that you know, we have some influence over that can get it into water supply.
Yeah, there are basically two ways that arsenic get into the water. It can be naturally occurring. Arsenic is an element like lead, I mentioned before, or like copper, right? It just kind of occurs in the ground in different places. It also can be a byproduct of pesticides, specifically herbicides that are used a lot on golf courses, for example, also in agriculture, and then also as a part of mining processes. Arsenic was sort of discovered as a poison by the Romans when they were making copper tools in their smelters. They would smelt this copper, and then in the flues they would get this greenish powder, and that's the first time that people actually started like collecting arsenic, not from the ground. And that's within I think a couple of decades it became one of the first poisons used to poison a Roman empire or poison a Roman emperor. So now the opposition to re-regulating arsenic is coming from the chemical lobbyists. Specifically, what we found in our investigation, it was one lobbyist for a couple different companies that make an herbicide. They had actually come to an agreement with EPA to phase out this herbicide that contains arsenic, but the withdrawal of the products was based on EPA completing its scientific review. So when this Congressman Mike Simpson was able to prevent EPA from completing its scientific review, the ban never went into effect, and so these herbicides are still on the market today.
So which herbicides?
Oh gosh, I could tell you, but it's nothing you would recognize. It's used mostly it's used in industrial uses. If you run a golf course, you'll probably know what I'm talking about. It's two companies, Drexel Pommel, and I can't remember the second one. I can look it up.
So, but if I'm spraying Roundup on my dandelions?
No, it's not Roundup. This is like very specific uses. So, for example, another community that has a really high incident of arsenic or had is Naples, Florida. So Naples, Florida is a huge golf mecca, and it's the only municipality that's been able to enact regulations around these herbicides because of the strength of this lobby.
I want to stay on this point for just a little bit longer. So this Congressman Simpson, what's the campaign finance connection? Is there one between him and these two companies?
Absolutely. So the companies hire a lobbyist. Let's say his name is Grizzle. Was that his name?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Grizzle, forget his first name, but he's a lobbyist, and he represents a lot of chemical companies. He has donated thousands of dollars to Mike Simpson's election campaign. Starting his first donation was about 3 months before he first met with the congressman on this very issue.
So you mentioned earlier that people might know arsenic from the Game of Thrones. For those of us who are maybe a little bit older and not as hip and aren't watching that, we might recognize it from Arsenic and Old Lace. With Cary Grant, what are some of the symptoms? So you talked about the cancer risks, but if you're not developing cancer or you've only had this perhaps in your water supply for a little while, what are the symptoms that people should look for, Rebecca?
So the doctors who have diagnosed arsenic poisoning told us that the difficulty is that it can mimic a lot of other things, and so symptoms could be neuropathy, peripheral neuropathy, tingling in your hands and your feet, fingertips, and nausea, vomiting, GI bleeding, headaches, weakness, those kinds of things. Things that could also be attributed to other diseases. And so what the doctors told us here in Michigan was that they would rule out a lot of other things, and then they would do a heavy metal testing, a urine arsenic test, to try to find out, are the levels of arsenic in a person's urine elevated?
Chris, are there other heavy metals in the grounds here that are also getting into water supplies that could mimic the same types of symptoms that arsenic create?
Not naturally occurring. Typically, arsenic is the big one. The other heavy metals that you can run into that cause kind of nervous system and some other damages are chromium and cadmium, and those are typically associated with polluted sites or some type of contamination from an industrial process.
We've got a question in the back.
Have you ever heard of the Mad Hatter?
from Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they used to use arsenic to cure the leather in the hats. So the Mad Hatter was somebody who made hats, and you got an awful lot of exposure to arsenic.
There is a as part of Reveal, we've just launched a podcast. So if you're interested in the world's best investigative reporting, search for Reveal on iTunes, and you can find our podcast. And a podcast that we're preparing is sort of a follow up to David's arsenic investigation, and we talked to a historian of poisons. There is such a thing. And one thing that arsenic was used for was green dye in clothing and wallpaper. There's a theory that Napoleon actually died because of the mold that was growing on his arsenic-dyed wallpaper on his South Atlantic island, and that somehow poisoned him. But it also was used in green clothing, and it started leaching, and people got sick because from their green clothing. And what some fashion historians believe, they're fashion historians too, is that you don't see a lot of green clothes these days. Even today, you don't see people wearing a lot of green. It's no longer in poison, but it's not a very popular color for clothing, and this is all an artifact of the fact that it was green used to be poisonous.
So help me out with something, though, because I thought when I heard in the stories, Rebecca, that you said people really only need to be worried about the water that they're drinking, that if they're washing their clothes with it or if they're bathing with it or anything like that, that's really not a risk. So how are you getting the arsenic through leaching wallpaper or clothing? Does it have to be consumed or not?
Well, so what I've heard from scientists I talked to at Dartmouth, which is where they study a lot of, they do a lot of arsenic and low dose testing. What she told me, Dr. Carolyn Murray, said that the understanding is now that levels below 300 parts per billion, you should be okay to bathe in and wash your clothes and do your dishes.
So these were just much higher.
Much higher. But that she did say, you know, for now, that's our understanding at this point.
And with the wallpaper, there was actually a chemical process that would happen when it became moldy, that it would become, there was a chemical process that would happen, and then it would become airborne, and then you would inhale it.
We have some more questions in the back.
Hi, thank you for being here. Chris, this is maybe directed to you. Not to get off topic, but is there any evidence of fracking? Does the process of fracking have anything with the releasing of more arsenic as we change the environment underground?
Sure, that's a good question. Not necessarily. Conditions would have to be very specific to be able to change the chemistry to release this, and the host rock that you're fracking has to have certain minerals in it that can that kind of house arsenic, so that when those become dissolved, it becomes part of the wastewater. And if that's not properly disposed, then yeah, it could become an issue. But there's a lot of things that have to. It kind of has to be the perfect storm in order for that to be the big issue. I think there's probably other concerns than arsenic with that specific process.
Another question.
I have two. The first question is, can arsenic be filtered out of the water? And the second question would be, does it impact crops that are grown and irrigated with water that contain dangerous levels of arsenic?
So first question, can you get rid of it?
You can. Usually what is recommended is a reverse osmosis filter, although what I've been told, and Chris, you might want to weigh in on this, is that if you have very high levels of arsenic, some people in the thumb might have very high levels, you might have to do several layers of treatment, reverse osmosis, membranes, what are those called? There's the absorptive membranes.
Yeah, there's okay. Absorptive membranes. There's also activated alumina compound that's kind of a media that you run water through that can absorb the arsenic. It also depends on the kind of arsenic. So if you have what's called trivalent arsenic or arsenic 3, That's not removed as effectively from water through a reverse osmosis system. That needs a pre-treatment step that can convert that type of arsenic to the easily removed version, the pentavalent or arsenic 5, commonly called. So there's a number of steps depending on the type of arsenic you have that needs to be done, but it can be removed through reverse osmosis. There's a few other treatment technologies, but those are the two main ones.
So I will get to your second question, but if a homeowner wants to put that system into their drinking water, you know, to protect their drinking water, the reverse osmosis of the membranes, what's that going to cost?
It ranges in price. There's systems between $300 up to, you know, $1,500, depending on the system. And, you know, along those lines, it's under the homeowner's best interest to go through all of the reviews and find out how much arsenic is actually listed as being able to be removed by that particular unit. So there's specifications on each unit saying what they'll filter the water down to or what level they'll get it down to.
So how do you find out? If you're on a well, how do you find out if there's arsenic in your water?
Well, that's something that it's the responsibility of the private well owner to get their water tested. Some counties are a little more proactive in requiring water testing during home sales. But that's only a few. I think it's just Washtenaw and Ingham.
Livingston.
Livingston
doesn't do point of sale. Ingham and Washtenaw do point of sale, and Livingston and a few others test for new wells or replacement wells.
Sure. But that's a pretty small number out of the affected area. So you know, the big thing is people need to be aware that. They're in control of that well, and they need to do their own testing out of their best interests for themselves.
And what, for best practices, how often do you test a well?
That's a good question. Typically, people should test their well once a year for bacteria and other things that can kind of crop up. Arsenic is something that you wouldn't necessarily test for unless you know you're in an area that may be affected by it. And if that's the case, then you would definitely add that to the schedule that you would look for.
Chris, I want to jump in. How do you know if you have arsenic 3 or arsenic 5 in your well?
That's another good question. That's another specific test that you need to actually request for a specific species, the species of arsenic that's present. We know that the majority of the arsenic present in the thumb area is arsenic 3, based on a study that our office did in the early 2000s. So that being the case, you know, if you do go to a reverse osmosis filter to treat that, then you need to do that extra step and get a pre-treatment filter to make sure that you're getting the arsenic 3 out of there. But you know, if you have the other species of arsenic, then you could get away with just the straight filter.
And then what about this issue of crops or gardens? If you water your plants, your gardens, or if a farmer is watering his crops with this water, does the arsenic get into the food chain?
Some of the same research the people in Colombia did, I've seen some looking at uptake in rice, especially in Bangladesh, where arsenic is a quite a big problem. They're seeing arsenic is being taken into, especially rice, but it's found in a number of other different foods also.
Rice is a culprit, also beer.
So drink up.
It's not in particularly high levels in food. But if you're eating, like if you're on a rice and beer diet, you should, which I am sometimes, You should go. Consumers Union has a really good resource page about arsenic in food, and it's specific. It tells you, like, depending on where the food is sourced from, how much of it you're eating. There are some guidelines there that are very scientific and very well researched.
Another question? Okay. Kristen will come and bring the microphone to you so everybody can hear.
One thing that might be worth looking at is the fact that higher arsenic levels in general are correlated with high iron levels, because arsenic 3 is very mobile, and arsenic 5 is more like phosphorus and phosphate, so calcium will lock it up in the ground. So, you know, if you have high iron in your water, it's probably a good idea to get tested. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is spring water that's bottled and sold commercially screened for arsenic?
I believe the regulation holds to any bottled water that's supplied, so I think they have to test that. Oh, someone's waving their hand in the back.
So you can't get Evian now with arsenic?
As far as I know, there are no standards for bottled water. Zero.
Ben, any idea about that? Do you know anything about that?
No? No, I don't know.
I have not looked into that. I'm not sure.
Stay tuned to the environment report. We have a story idea to check out. Any other questions?
Other than the herbicides, does arsenic appear anyplace else? And how do they mine arsenic? How is it found?
Well, I don't think people specifically mine for it. There's a number of different minerals that contain it in their as an impurity in the mineral matrix, and it also. But the primary one is in sulfide minerals, and the one that's in prevalence in Michigan is a iron sulfide called pyrite or fool's gold. When those break down or dissolve, then the arsenic in that mineral gets released into the water. So they get it through mining different minerals like that and pulling the arsenic out and using it in that their industrial process to as part of that specific herbicide.
So, Ben, do you know, is it purposely added to the herbicides, or is it just a byproduct of the process that they don't bother to remove?
Oh, the arsenic is put into the herbicides in order to make them more effective. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
So this was a big issue in Michigan in the late 90s. There was a lot of talk about arsenic and getting your wells tested. What happened to that discussion? Why don't we hear about that anymore?
I asked that question to a number of public health officials. Why has this fallen off the radar for a lot of us? And a lot of us at Michigan Radio hadn't heard about the high arsenic levels. And the consensus among a lot of people was that when the EPA lowered the standard from 50 parts per billion down to 10, there was a big push to the USGS went out and did a study around that time of arsenic levels. There was just more of a push from health officials to say, hey, you should test your well. And then a lot of people say, well, it just kind of, we consider the problem solved, or we consider we had reached enough people. And so it fell off the radar for a lot of reasons.
So is there anybody at the state level whose job it is to pay attention to this or to speak to this?
I've been trying to find that out, and I have not found that out. As far as I can tell, no. We tried to get somebody from the Michigan Department of Community Health a number of times to speak with us, and finally got somebody today on stateside, and they gave us somebody who couldn't answer the policy questions that we wanted answered. So I don't have an answer on that yet.
We have a question back there, but while you're traveling, Kristen, what about, we've talked about private wells, what about people who live on city water? Can you basically assume that if you're on city water, you're safe from arsenic?
Well, that's a trick question.
All right.
If you're on city water, you can assume that your water meets the EPA federal standard, unless you might be on a smaller source that's out of compliance. That's possible. But most places in Michigan meet the standard, and actually they treat to well below the standard. most of the time, because when they put in the treatment technology, they now treat to 5 or some even down to 2. So probably less than 10 in most cases.
Yeah, but this is where the EPA is trying to re-regulate, and they're not able to. So even water, like I said before, even water that is at the EPA standard can still carry a considerable cancer risk and a considerable IQ risk. I mean, one of the other findings of the study was that people who drink water at the EPA standard, they've shown that IQ can be lowered.
If the EPA standards are lowered and put into effect as a regulatory matter, are there municipalities in Michigan or around the country that could face considerable expense in the increase to treatment that they would have to do to their water to meet those new levels?
We asked, David and I asked that question of the DEQ, and that's when we were told that probably a lot of municipalities would not have any trouble meeting a lower standard if it were lower to, say, 5. Some of the smaller places, though, places that are on private wells, might have more trouble.
A question in the back.
So, talking about levels, in the days when lead levels were first starting to be an issue, the EPA said 80 was safe, 80 parts per million. Then they lowered it to 40 because it was proven not to be safe. And then they lowered it to 20 because 40 was proven not to be safe. And then they lowered it to 10. And it looks like really 2 is the safe level. But, you know, until you do the science, you don't always find out. And when they lower the levels, then there are implications for expense.
So we could be seeing the same thing with arsenic, where if these levels go into effect, they could yet find again that the levels need to be lowered even further.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And there is even a new study out last week that says even low levels of arsenic, ones that we have assumed to be okay because, you know, we're exposed to arsenic all over our lives, through food, through beer, through water. But even low levels may not be safe. So the science, I mean, that was what was surprising to us at the beginning of the story, is that the science is evolving fairly rapidly on something that we consider to be very old hat.
I wanted to speak to the impact on the local municipalities. In Portage, which is just south of here, we run on wells, and 3 of the, I believe, 21 wells in the city, when they lowered the level for arsenic, were found to have too high of a level of arsenic. So the city was required to put in an arsenic treatment plant. That cost $5 million and was bonded out and is being paid for over time by all of the people who use city water. So it is a significant cost to be able to put that in. And if, as this gentleman says, the actual safe level is 2, then we're looking at other wells and things like that. So the cost really is significant for the local municipalities.
So how many years ago was that you built a $5 million plant?
It was finished about 2 years ago.
Okay, so it wouldn't have gone up too much since then.
No.
So $5 million might be about right.
Yeah.
Now, would that one plant, could that serve any municipality, or is it dependent
upon? No, that one plant only serves 3 out of 21 wells in Portage, the city wells. And it's because of where it is located, it's able to serve those 3 wells because they're all contiguous. We would have to build other treatment plants to serve other wells if the level went down again.
So, Rebecca, in some of the reporting that you did, you visited some places that were on wells or were getting water that were out of compliance. What do those places do, and what's the rules about people who have to provide bottled water to their clients or their school children or things like that?
So there are about roughly, I think it's 36 places in Michigan that are on bottled water agreements. And these are smaller places, daycares, churches, small office buildings that are on a well, and they serve. And within the EPA rule, it has to do with something like 25 people for 6 months of the year. I can't tell you the exact specifics, but they were allowed to serve bottled water instead of having to put in expensive treatment, because for a lot of these places, it is quite significant if you're on a small business or a daycare to have to treat your water.
Now, is there anybody at the state level who inspects those places and stops by to see if they're in compliance and providing bottled water?
Well, it's the DEQ, but the enforcement comes through the local health department.
Any other questions? I thought I saw a hand up. Yes, woman right here.
If you're drinking water that has arsenic in it, where does it go in the body that causes cancer or lowers the IQ? Is it a fatty? Is it part of the fatty parts of your body, or is it muscle tissues, or does it just go everywhere?
Yeah, I can't speak to the specific mechanism of where it binds to. Typically, the things that are more non-polar, things that are like organic compounds tend to migrate into fats, and then things that are ionic, like arsenic and mercury and some of those things, go into the muscle tissue and the nervous system. So I would suspect it's similar to that. And judging by the wide range of symptoms that you can get from it, it seems like it's probably that mechanism is the most likely.
It doesn't bioaccumulate in any specific organ. It's not like lead in that way. It does go all over the body and cause problems all over the body. The acute symptoms that Rebecca spoke to are very similar to like a cholera. Like if you're being poisoned by arsenic, one of the reasons why it has been an effective poison in the past is that it does look like severe GI distress or cholera. And over the long term, you see health effects like, you know, at lower levels over long-term poisoning, you see, you know, lethargy, unable to get out of bed because it's just having a sort of global effect on your body.
So if somebody is experiencing those symptoms or you know, if you are having troubles with your family with illnesses and you test for arsenic and there is arsenic in your well water, when you stop ingesting it, how fast do you get well? Ever or does it turn itself around?
Well, what I've been told, we spoke to a woman whose family suffered from arsenic poisoning, and she said that within a few weeks they started feeling a bit better. But here 20 years later, she still has some lingering effects. The arsenic, I guess, doesn't completely go away. Some of the doctors have said that it can take a while. In some cases, people might require chelation therapy, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, to actually get that arsenic out of your system.
So not only can't I pronounce it, I don't know what that is. What is chelation therapy?
I can't exactly tell you. Can you tell me?
You put a metal complexing agent that will essentially, you're binding something to that arsenic, and then when it's bound to that, then it gets flushed out of your system.
Gentleman back there.
So the question was asked, where does the arsenic go in your body to cause cancer? It would go in your cells, and it would go in the cells that are dividing. So a lot of the cells don't divide after you grow into an adult stage, but when you're a child, all of your cells pretty much are dividing as you grow. Once you reach adult stage, cells like skin cells, blood cells, gut surface cells, the immune cells, those are the cells that are most actively dividing. So those are the cells that are going to be more vulnerable. The arsenic probably goes into, replaces another atom that's similar to it. And I can't remember my chemistry well enough to tell you for sure, but I think it might be phosphorus. I don't know. Do you know? So
are you guys available in Ypsilanti tomorrow night?
So iron or phosphorus are, you know, pretty common in the body. You know, phosphorus is used all over the place for energy, and iron is also very involved in the blood and the muscle. If the atom goes into a molecule in a place that's similar to one of those and replaces it, then the molecule is not shaped correctly, and it can affect the production of DNA, and that's where you're going to get cancer.
Well, thank you. Do we have another question up here?
Can I just add one quick thing to that? The the Columbia University study that came out in April mentioned three cancers specifically, lung cancer, bladder cancer, and skin cancer.
I have a question about once the arsenic is taken out, either by reverse osmosis or in whatever system, is there a regulation statewide to then dispose of the arsenic at that point?
Yeah, so actually there isn't a regulation on that. That gets disposed either in the sewer or your septic through the waste return water on those reverse osmosis systems. And depending on which one you have, it could be, one gallon of treated water gives you 5 to 7 gallons of wastewater. So not super efficient in terms of what you return. So there's quite a bit of... Right. Yeah. So it gets disposed either, depending on whatever system you have, if it's public sewage or if it's a septic tank, the waste from that reverse osmosis process goes into that.
Why are arsenic levels high in beer?
I'm not exactly sure. I would assume because it has a lot of water in it. The reason it's in rice is because rice is basically sitting in water. So in areas where you have high levels of arsenic naturally occurring, it just gets into the rice paddy water, right? And beer is also made of water mostly. So I would assume, but I don't know.
And some beers have a large component of rice in the base grain that they use. Certain lighter beers. So,
nothing's without risk, right? The alcohol will probably get you before the arsenic does, I would think, in most beers.
In most cases, yeah.
So you guys have talked a lot about the health risk, but I'm wondering if there's any specific studies or specific research on arsenic and child development?
That's something that the folks at Dartmouth are looking at quite a bit. They're looking at the impacts of arsenic on fetal development and child development, and Dr. Murray is the person I spoke with, and she's part of that team. She said that their studies of young children are still ongoing, so she wasn't prepared to tell me anything about that. I don't know if you've heard anything outside of the IQ. The IQ study was looking specifically at kids in Maine, so they studied kids and found IQ losses of 5 to 6 points for kids who are drinking water with 5 parts per billion arsenic. So that's half of what the EPA says is acceptable. And that is the first study of its kind in the U.S., so we'll have to see if that can be repeated and so on, but that's what I know so far.
Yeah, also unclear whether or not that sticks around in the long term once the arsenic is removed. That's not known.
Other questions? Well, go back to the cell thing then, because when we talk about the childhood development, do you know, does that also, I'm going to get too far into biology here, but is that happening in both meiosis and mitosis? So are the gametes exposed to the arsenic as well when you've got sexual reproduction cells that are dividing?
Well, anytime you have cells that are dividing and reproducing, there's always a risk that if there are other chemicals in there that are going to be incorporated into the DNA, that can change the character of the DNA. It basically, you're putting in a ringer there, and all you need is one mutation for something to change. Now, most mutations don't do anything, but if you get a mutation in the right spot, it can cause a different trait, and cancer is one of those traits.
So let me ask at the other end on there, what efforts are there either at the state or the federal level for the state, to reignite this information campaign so that people know about the arsenic that could be there? And then at the federal level, is Simpson effectively able to just stop this in its tracks and continue this kicking down the road of the science all on his own? Or is there any possibility that the EPA will eventually get the new regulations that it wants?
Well, so are you asking, will the state of Michigan do something to lower our own level, acceptable level of arsenic? Or are you asking, because that is a question that we asked at the DEQ, and we were told that no, the state is not going to do that unless the federal standard is changed.
But will the state do anything to reinvigorate its information campaign?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything.
And then what about at the federal level with Simpson's ability to stop the EPA science from moving forward?
So when President Obama was running for office the first time, you might remember he made a big push to take politics out of science, right? Science needs to be what we make all our decisions on in the federal government. And the EPA also had a big push in 2009, 2010 to take the politics out of science. But what we've seen time and time again is that they haven't been able to do that. The politics are still determining what is determined as science in the federal agencies. And as long as Washington remains as politicized as it is and as obstructionist as it is, then there's not a lot of hope for EPA changing these regulations. I mean, it did. Look, what Simpson did was he did not pass a law. He simply inserted a paragraph into a report attached to a bill. And EPA read that report and said, oh, we better not do anything, because if we do, then they're going to take away our funding. So EPA is not legally forbidden from changing the regulation. They're just unwilling to do so based on the political environment in Congress, right? But as long as that environment is there, we can't really depend on anything happening.
Sir.
So what is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention doing about this, since this affects human health?
To my knowledge, CDC is not doing anything about arsenic. This is it's largely happening in universities. The research is happening at Columbia and at, you said, Dartmouth,
Berkeley.
So what EPA does, the way the process is supposed to work, is EPA takes all the body of work, all the research that's coming out about a specific chemical or a specific toxin, and synthesizes it and comes out with a recommendation, right? And that's how the process is supposed to work. But what Congressman Simpson was able to do is say, EPA, we don't trust your science. We want you to follow the lead of the national academies. And so that caused the national academies to then do their own complete review, and which delayed it. And so they're not stopping anything. They're just delaying. And so now it's been delayed 15 years. And now it's looking like it'll be another 5 years before it comes up again. And this is not just arsenic. There are 40-some-odd chemicals that the EPA wants to re-regulate, but they're not allowed to because they can't get a single recommendation, they can't get a single report approved so that they can make new regulations.
So, Chris, how solid is the science on this?
Well, all of it seems to be backing itself up, and I think Ben may be able to speak more to this because he's more in touch with all the different research entities that were involved. But in terms of EPA lowering the limit, I think they were ready to pull the trigger, and it was a last-minute backdoor, one
paragraph that got inserted into this committee report that said, you know, maybe NAS should take care of this. And then EPA said, okay, we better not do it.
Question over here.
Shouldn't University of Michigan and Michigan State University be doing something? I hear Columbia, Berkeley, Dartmouth, given the Michigan-centric arsenic issue. Shouldn't University of Michigan and Michigan State be doing something?
So the question is, shouldn't the University of Michigan or Michigan State University be doing some of this research as well, given the Michigan connection to the arsenic in the groundwater?
There actually have been, I'm not sure what Michigan State is doing, but there have been University of Michigan researchers who have been looking at bladder cancer in the thumb and arsenic, and looking at stroke and cerebrovascular disease and arsenic. Those are Michigan-specific studies. So there actually have been some research that I'm aware of out of Michigan. I'm not sure about Michigan State.
Sure. And to add to that, they've also done some work looking at the source and some of the mechanisms involved in arsenic leaching out. The U of M folks, Dr. Niriagu and one of his students worked on that specifically.
So if someone is here and they're learning about this either through the media for the first time or tonight for the first time, and they're thinking, I got to get my well tested, where do they go? Just look up in the phone book for arsenic well testing, or how do you go about that?
You want to take that one, Chris?
Sure. Well, your first stop should probably be your local health department. They're tasked with overseeing well inspections and restaurant inspections and things of that sort. But they're probably your first call to make if you want your well tested. And they can put you in contact with a state lab and provide you with a kit that you can sample your water and send in. And they'll have detailed instructions on that. There is also information on the state of Michigan's website on how to get in contact with their lab. It's the MDEQ water quality lab. And then there's also some guidance that the US EPA has up on what are certified labs that you can expect a reliable result from. Okay, thanks.
Do we have another question over here? Yes.
Have these high concentrations of arsenic. Do you know geologically what happened to those areas that the arsenic became embedded in the rock?
Not so much the UP. Did you say the UP? I don't think there's much arsenic in the UP, is there?
No, there's a couple of counties that had higher. Right, but those are just a small number of wells that had a higher concentration in that 20 parts per billion range. But by and large, the majority of the problems are in the Michigan Thumb area, and there is some in Ingham County.
What's the geological history that creates that there?
Certainly. So there's two main units that they're finding arsenic in, stuff that's wells that are in the Marshall Sandstone and wells that are in the glacial drift or the glacial material that sits above the rock. It's still a bit of a mystery of what the exact mechanism is that releases it from. We understand the chemistry of it and what should happen, but they're still trying to narrow it down on what exactly is happening to release the arsenic in the glacial sediments and what's happening in the bedrock, trying to relate the well construction, some of the other details that would get arsenic out of there. But geologically, we know that there's a certain mineral in the Marshall Sandstone that holds arsenic, and when that mineral, iron sulfides, the arsenic that's in these pyrites, arsenopyrites, when those get dissolved, the arsenic gets released. In the glacial sediment, it's not as clear. What depends on what the source rock was. So the glacial material was broken up and carried away, and if the source material for that rock had arsenic in it, well, then there's arsenic in the sediment, and then that can be released through either of those mechanisms, either reduction and of the mineral, so or oxidation. So you oxidize the pyrite, and the arsenic will come out. Or if the arsenic is bound to iron on a sand grain coating, you can dissolve that by reducing that, and that will come out that way.
So let's have this gentleman over here, and then we've got one in the back.
A comment coming back to an early observation about lead.
not really being, the liability is not really being known until the 1960s. My understanding is that when lead was put into gasoline in the 1920s, they knew very well that it affected the nervous system and there were liabilities and casualties from that, but it was an economic decision. So I just wanted to make it a deeper historical arc in terms of, but it no doubt relates to the economics overpowering science. Yeah.
We could probably come up with a lot more examples than just those two, unfortunately. So. Sir, you had a question?
What form is the arsenic in? Is it a part of a ion?
Yes.
I feel like I'm in chemistry class.
So it's both. It's arsenite and arsenate, okay? And the... the arsenic 3 and arsenic 5, those two species. But it's typically the arsenate and arsenite is, not to nerd out on you, but it's like hydrogen, arsenic, and then a sulfate are the components of that ion. The reason why the arsenic 5 is easier to take out during reverse osmosis is because it's negatively charged. So you can attract that and take that out of the water easier than the one that's neutrally charged.
So let's make it a little simpler for those of us who haven't done science since college. If I had arsenic in my hand, am I holding a liquid or a solid?
It's a liquid in the water. Okay. It's all dissolved right in the water.
Okay. Any other questions?
Does arsenic... So it affects women more than men, you said at the beginning.
And I don't know why that is, so if that's your question, I don't know.
Well, yeah, that was my question. And then also, I wanted to know, if you were pregnant, do you have to become aware of how much arsenic you are ingesting more than if you were just every day? Because my sister just had a baby, and I know that was one thing she wasn't freaking out about, out of everything else there was to freak out about while she was pregnant.
You know, I don't happen to know the answer to that. I do know that I have a baby, and I asked our pediatrician about baby rice cereal because I was aware that after my first son was born, we didn't know about that, so we fed him a normal amount of rice cereal. And then with our second son, I asked our doctor about that, and she said that the American Medical Association now recommends using rice cereal in moderation for babies. So I don't know in terms of limiting, you know, what if I don't haven't heard of specific different limits for women, pregnant women, in terms of rice consumption. I don't know, Mark, if you ran across that when Mark did a post on food. I don't know if you...
No, it's
all about
how much you consume.
Okay.
I'm Mark. I work at Michigan Radio with Rebecca on the Environment Report. But it was all about how much you consume. So it was, I think the AMA, the American Association of Pediatrics, recommends that you vary the diet, use other grains to feed your baby. So it's all about avoiding those kinds of foods consistently. So if you're consistently eating rice or consistently feeding somebody rice cereal, then you are consistently giving them a dose of arsenic, and you want to avoid that.
Is that why they say not to feed babies water recently? I mean, they say don't give infants water. They say just breast milk or formula until they're over one.
No, I think that has to do with their kidneys and their ability to take in water.
So, but I think, Chris, it might have been you, but somebody mentioned earlier knowing where your rice came from. Does that matter, like whether the rice is from one country or another? And is that on packages? How do you know whether your rice-a-roni comes from one place and your Uncle Ben's is coming from another?
I don't think there's any labeling. Did you find that Mark did our food post? I'm referring back to Mark.
So yeah, the researchers at Consumers Union I spoke with said they don't really have a good idea about where the hot spots are. They know in the South that some of the rice that comes from there, the fields near there had been treated with cotton, and that had an arsenic component to the weed killers there. And so they suspect that some of that is getting into the rice. But they don't have a real good idea of how that is traveling in the food system. And so the researchers said until the labeling and the research catches up with that, it's important just to vary your foods.
Well, there's also arsenic in apple juice and grape juice because arsenic containing pesticides were used for a long time on orchards, and arsenic doesn't go away. It sticks around in the soil, and so that's why there are now limits from the FDA on apple juice and grape juice, I think, right, for both of those. They haven't put limits? I thought they had. No? Okay.
No, but I mean, to Mark's point, like, the Consumers Union resource page on this is really, really good. Like, you should go and check it out.
But it's, I mean, it almost sounds like it's unavoidable. You can't completely eradicate arsenic from your life.
No, and I don't think you really need to. I mean, it's only when it gets to a certain level that it starts affecting you, you know? It's like, I mean, it's naturally occurring. It's just part of our world, so it's part of you, right? But if it does accumulate in some things, and so if you accumulate those things in your body, then you'll be accumulating arsenic in your body.
Yes, I'm sure Chris will be able to point this, but it travels in water, and so some of the highest concentrations of arsenic in food sometimes is in lettuce leaves, if it's grown in an area that contains arsenic, because it travels so well in water. But you're not eating lettuce constantly, so you're not getting totally exposed to that a lot. So
you don't know my daughter. Salads all the time. Any other questions?
Sir.
We found out about arsenic because the World Bank funded a bunch of wells to help the Bangladeshis drink water because the river was full of all kinds of other fecal contamination, all kinds of other things. Well, the World Bank didn't do any analyses ahead of time of what exactly the minerals were that those wells would tap. And that's why the Bangladeshis have one of the worst situations in the world, you know, with the skin sores and the cancer and all the other stuff, because it acts just like iron. So, you know, that's a watchword, I think.
With this issue sort of being low level, I'm curious to hear from the two reporters. When you started calling people and asking about arsenic, what was the reaction? Were people surprised that you were even bringing the topic up?
Yes, all the time. I've had a number of officials say, why do you want to talk about arsenic? Or, we solved that problem. You know, this is over. This is not an issue. I really had to push, in some cases, to get interviews because people either didn't want to talk to me about it or they just didn't consider it that much of a problem.
What about nationally?
Well, and I think the bias that we had when CPI first came to us with the story, like, arsenic? What? You know, I think most people have that bias as well, and most people don't understand the way we didn't understand that the science on something as old as arsenic can be evolving so rapidly in the near past, right? Like, there's a great big study came out just last week about arsenic in children, and low levels of arsenic may actually be more hazardous than we knew. Very, very surprising.
And was it similar in Maine as well, the reaction from officials there that we had in Michigan?
So we didn't talk to public health officials in Maine. We talked to people who were part of this Columbia study. So Columbia knew that there were high levels of arsenic in certain parts of Maine, and so they went out and said, hey, we'll test your water for free and give you a T-shirt if you participate in our study. And so... So a bunch of people signed up, and they had really high levels of arsenic. And they were shocked by that because they got the results of their drinking water test back before the results of the study were finished. Then the results of the study came out, and they said, not only do you have high levels of arsenic, but your children's IQ level is suffering because of it. So it was very, very surprising and very shocking for many, many people there.
I was going to ask the same question if they were green T-shirts. So let me do a quick informal poll. This is certainly not a scientific sampling because of the number of people in the room, but how many people here are on private wells or on their own wells? Okay. And how many of those who are on their own wells have had them tested for arsenic? Tomorrow? I mean, does that surprise you? For the geologic, no, that would be pretty typical across Michigan?
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard. I think it's not something that gets communicated all that well. When you're, the owner of a well, that becomes your sole water supply. But there's no handbook that comes along and says, this is your routine maintenance that you got to take care of. Everyone knows they got to change the oil in their car, but not that they have to sample their well every year or that sort of thing. And so that sort of awareness is something that's missing in terms of outreach.
So we're getting a little bit towards the end. I'll take a question here, and then I want to get to give you guys a heads up, one sort of closing statement. If there's one thing that people leave with today, what would it be besides get your well tested? Because that's the obvious one. Sir, you had a question. Just talk loud.
We moved from Michigan to Massachusetts, and when we bought a house, we said we wanted water tests. They said, well, we don't do water tests in Massachusetts when you buy houses. Michigan, you're required to do that, and I don't know if arsenic is in that water test or not. So we said, we want a water test. And they said, well, the water's fine. You know, it's wonderful water. We said, we want a water test. And the nitrate level was 14. And 10 is the considered safe. The report came back that 14 is high enough to kill a newborn. And the people who are selling us the house, their granddaughter, who was born there, had spina bifida and SIDS and died. And the reason they were moving was all the bad memories about the death of their granddaughter. And then after we moved in, we had to drill a new well. They had a well in the backyard where the cows were, and the nitrate level was from the cow poop right around the well. And it was just a dug well. It was 2 feet, the water level was 2 feet below the ground level. We drilled a well into the rock, and our nitrate level was nice and low. But we found out later that they were getting water from the neighbors every day.
We've got time probably for one more question before I give these guys their final statements, if anybody has one. All right, if you think of one during the final statements, we're not going to leave immediately, so feel free to come up and ask us any question that you have afterwards. But Rebecca, we'll start with you. And any final thoughts or takeaways you want to make sure that people leave with tonight?
I think one of the things that was striking to me when we spoke with Renee Thompson, when her family was suffering from arsenic poisoning, and she went public about arsenic in Michigan back 20 years ago. And it's really, the fact that it's dropped off since then is one thing that's striking. But she also said that people approached her and got mad at her because of going public, because they were afraid that their property values would suffer. She said that actually, she had no problem selling her house because she put in a treatment system. She was very diligent about getting it checked and making sure the arsenic was removed down as far as you can go, at least. And had somebody buy her house who moved from another state and was aware of the arsenic issue and bought her house because of the standards she had and the filtration systems she had. So I think her message was, as scary as this might sound, she just said, you know, there are things you can do. So it's possible to take action and not have to live in fear.
Ben, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, we're a national show, so we look at this on the national level. And for us, this is first and foremost a political corruption issue. And this is one congressman, one powerful congressman, who's been able to prevent EPA from reporting new science, re-regulating arsenic, and you can see what effect that has on the states, where the state of Michigan says, oh, until EPA does something, until the feds do something, we're not going to do anything. So you can see how that political corruption in Congress really trickles down and affects people all over the country very, very profoundly. So when we look at this, at this story, it's much, much bigger than arsenic. It's not just arsenic. It's not just those 30 or 40 some odd chemicals that are also not being re-regulated. This is endemic. This is a symptom of an endemic problem that's happening right now in Washington. And we're going to keep looking for ways to expose it and to try to stop it.
And Chris, any final thoughts?
No, I just thank everyone for their time.
Wait, that's my job. That's
great. Sorry.
Say whatever you'd like.
No, yeah. I guess, yeah, to speak to the importance of just understanding what you have to be careful of and to just be aware that if you have a well, you need to take care of it, and it will take care of you.
Well, as he said, thank you, everybody, for coming. And let me have a round of applause for the panelists who are willing to share their information with us tonight. And some knowledgeable members of the audience who also were sharing information with us this evening. Again, we're at the Michigan Radio, and we're at 91.7. Well, all of our things are over there. So you can probably hear us at 104.1 here in Kalamazoo. The Environment Report airs Tuesdays and Thursdays on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, but there's great stuff on the radio there all the time, so be sure to tune in and listen. And we are very accessible, so if you hear stuff you like, you hear stuff that you don't like, email us or find us on the web or on our Facebook page. Just search Michigan Radio. Now a question. Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot. This was great.
You're welcome.
Could you clarify what insecticide, herbicide contains arsenic, and if there are crops grown in where we near where we live, should we watch out?
I don't have that right on the top of my head. What I can tell you is that it has like it's not a consumer herbicide. Like you can't go to Home Depot and buy it. It's used primarily. It was used very prevalently in agriculture. It's not so much anymore. It's used mostly now in golf courses. But if you go to the Center for Public Integrity's website, it's publicintegrity.org. There's the big story from David Heath is there, and that he does name the herbicides. There are two herbicides, I believe, here in the United States that use it, and it's all there. Sorry? MSMA, which is an acronym for something very long and chemically.
Well, I believe there's. Sorry.
Can you bring up?
Go ahead. Oh, sorry. And I believe there's also a chemical registry for the state of Michigan. I think the Department of Ag has that you can look up what chemicals are being used or registered for use in the state. And I think that might be also be available by county. So you can might be able to check there.
Well, thank you again for coming. I hope everybody had an interesting time tonight and learned a lot. And we'll see you the next time we do an Issues and Ale out here in Kalamazoo. Thanks again.